name is Leon Johnson, and I am an alcoholic. On October the 7th through the 10th, 1993, the 40th Georgia State AA Convention was held at the Radisson Hotel in Augusta, Georgia, with approximately 1,700 people attending. During the convention, I came into a tape of the first Georgia State AA Convention, which was also held in Augusta, Georgia, in September of 1954. It was given to me by Mabel Johnson, wife of James Johnson of Washington, Georgia, who has gone to the big meeting in the sky. He was a member of the committee, along with Johnny McNeil from Thompson and Lewis Mulherin of Augusta. The best information available to me, all members of the committee have passed on. It was the start of a big event in AA in the state of Georgia, held at the Bonair Hotel. Approximately 325 members attended that convention. So, if you would like, how about settling back and let's take a trip back into the past to September the 24th, 1954, at the Bonair Hotel, where Austin Ripley of Will Fights, Wisconsin, was the speaker.
And his deep understanding. But he was not always the distinguished-looking gent you see here this morning. And despite his denial, that stock and phone thing is still true. But, he was a peculiar kind of a drunk, Griff was. Had a very peculiar drinking pattern. Used to be a tavern where he'd go in every night for his nightcap. Said nightcap consisting of four double shots of Old Step Pot. And this night he went into the bar, and there was no one there but the bartender and an old barfly. Griff held up his hand, the bartender brought the four double shots, and he downed them. Didn't say a word, he walked right up the side of the wall, across the ceiling, down the other side of the wall, and out the door. And the old swamp angel who was standing there, he said, "Gee, he's a funny guy, ain't he?" Bartender says, "Yeah, never says good night." Have seen a good AA. Well, remembering Mrs. Ripley and I, the wonderful hospitality of the Augusta group when we were down here 2 years ago, we are both happy, honored, and I assure you that I am humble in your invitation. We are honored in its extension, happy in its fulfillment, and knowing my own inadequacy for the job that has been assigned to me, I assure you, it was a feeling of deep humility. In fact, I feel like Clancy, the Irishman, alcoholic. He rushed into a bar one day in an old friend's bar, and he says, "Clancy, boy, give me three double shots before the trouble starts." Put the three double shots, and he downed them. Now he says, "Clancy, old pal," he says, "where is the trouble, and when does it begin?" Clancy says, "It begins here and now, because I ain't got a penny in my pocket." Some very wonderful acquaintances, as has Mrs. Ripley, Georgia, and throughout the town. But I don't know many of you well, but I do know one of you intimately. And because he, in his daily personal life, exemplifies the finest ideals of AA, because his humility is genuine, his patience vast, and his charity broad. And because it was through his devotion and zeal that this conference is both a reality and such a magnificent success, I feel very sure that you would have me tell him publicly what is privately in our hearts. And so to you, my friend Lewis Mulherin, always and everywhere the generous praiser of others, You who have done so much for so many, for so long, a salute straight through from our heart to yours. And to your lovely wife, loyal wife, Marion, whose zeal in industry and devotion is also largely responsible not only for little sobriety, but for this magnificent conference. And to your stalwart and wonderful friends, Joe and Francis Parker, and Harry and Marie Williams, to all of you fine people, the applause of our hearts. After the wonderful speakers that you have heard throughout this conference, I'm sure you're not expecting this morning any oratory, and that is a relief. But you know what oratory is. Oratory is like a pair of steer horns, a point here and a point there and a lot of bull in between. Of course, there was a time when, like the rest of you, at the gurgle of a bottle, I could soar off into oratorical pyrotechnics of the most lurid hue. And the fact that my listeners, if any, didn't know what I was talking about made things quite unanimous. For, of course, I didn't. But now, like the rest of you, I am strictly a ginger ale speaker. And so if I go flat on you after I've been uncorked a few minutes, why, you'll have to put that down to one of the hidden prices of AA membership. Well, these certainly, for you AAs of Georgia, these past 3 days have been your great days. Now, this will not be noted in the passing of this hurrying world. It may not even be recorded on radio or newspaper. But I feel very sure that Almighty God Himself attends the heavenly teletype and has coded your heartbeats into that language of homage, praise, and thanksgiving, which He finds so eloquent and pleasing. For truly, this has been, as Griff said, a magnificent conference. And I think every one of us who is here is indeed privileged for the opportunity of being present. Here we have been informed, instructed, and inspired. We have been amused, entertained, and superbly cared for. We have been relaxed, refreshed, and reinvigorated. Our speakers have been earnest, sincere, humble, and eloquent. And our hosts have been gracious, charming, and very kind indeed. And no man who is not dead to the symphony of life could stand up here and look around this room this morning without being thrilled to his very marrow. For caught up in this moment of high inspiration surely are many of the aspirations of the human heart, silently and beautifully crystallized in tribute to our God and in gratitude to each other. But that honor that we, your speakers, would do you, you have received already in your heart. For I feel very sure that when the chime of the grace of God struck the hour marking the opening of this conference, each earnest AA was given the accolade of knighthood in the heraldry of the Spirit. And it was conferred upon you in that quiet room of the soul where writs of honor are issued with the simple words, "Well done." And I know that we're all under the spell of the silent, poignant drama which is being enacted in every one of your hearts this morning. And I know, too, that beneath a surface lightness and gaiety, there is a height and a depth of quiet exaltation which transcends all outward celebration. So with you of Georgia AAs in the honored roles, this great drama of human redemption is being reenacted upon the stage of life before an audience whose only reaction is a simple word, magnificent. And so I'm sure that there is a song in your heart, every one of you this morning, not the boasting, boisterous symphony of materialistic achievement, but the quiet, simple melody of the song of peace. Peace. Ineffable peace. But any honor or homage which omitted that silent and very valiant group composed largely of our wives, and where the woman is the alcoholic, her husband, certainly would be hollow and incomplete. For you are wives, are the unsung, and are the unsung heroines in the greatest struggle on earth. The bitter battle for a human life. For that is exactly what was at stake in the grim and awful struggle between freedom and obsession. In that fearful, frightful siege of a human soul, in which you are wise for the gallant litter bearers of the maimed and wounded. Oh yes, you too, our wives, were in the war, dead center in its swirling vortex, caught up in the burning white heat of the most terrible conflict on earth, the battle against man's demonic obsession. But sometimes we, your alcoholic husband, sometimes we retired from the fight. We came out of the front line, always defeated, but we came out. For periods of rest, labeled temporary sobriety. But for you, our wives, there was no surcease. For you knew we would be returning, only to be defeated again. And so you remained in no man's land, pityingly, despairingly, waving us back. As with the false swagger of the fearful, we bellowed and roared our defiance to cover the panic in our hearts, and the terror in our souls. And once again, you are wise. Step to our sides, for the dance of death, as the throbbing drums of doom boomed out their message of despair. And each time when the violence of our passion again was spent, when our bodies were sodden, our brains numb, and our souls terrified with booze, it was you, our wives, who covered our retreat from imminent death to the tragic camp of armistice. And there you stood by, helpless and all but hopeless, as our swelling arrogance, malignant self-pity, and hideous selfishness acted as weird and devilish narcotics in restoring us once again to temporary duty. Oh yes, you are wise, you too were in the war. And none of us can find the words with which to express, as Chuck said the other day, our deep and sincere gratitude for your devotion and loyalty which saw us through the days and nights of mutual terror. But now, with us, you are voluntarily enlisted for life in one of the most gallant but calm of existence. That's an alcoholic phenomenon. And you know, the human tongue coursing after the spirit of man always is out of breath when it attempts to translate the thoughts of the mind into the language of the heart. But I can tell you, you are wise, that the prayer on our lips at the close of this conference will be a petition to Almighty God that He may make known in your heart the love and devotion in ours. And never again will we put you through the experience of Elizabeth, the wife of an alcoholic, the very soul that the old boy coming home barreled up every night, that she finally decided to do something about it. Well, she found out where his hangout was. And she roared into the bar room, pounded on the bar, and she said, "Give me some of that stuff my husband drinks." The bartender put a triple shot of old tennis shoe on the bar, and she drank it, and she sputtered and almost strangled to death And after a couple of glasses of water, when she could catch her breath, she came up spouting. "My God," she said, "how can anybody drink that damnable stuff?" And her husband, who had been sitting at a table there in the corner, he staggered away and said, "She and you thought all the time I was having a good time." Well, I think that you and I, all alcoholics, I think we have known the terror as few men ever have known it and come back. Just a quick glance over our shoulder at times, and we can see ourselves again, France and the devil's dance. And every one of us can feel that bitter, biting, scorpion sting of the tyrant's whip as it sears and lashes the living flesh from our dying spirits. And we can hear again the icy winds of spiritual desolation shriek through the shrouds of our frenzied spirit. For it was we more than most men, I am sure, who have echoed that terrible cry which has come ringing down the centuries from the Garden of Gethsemane. "O God, why hast thou forsaken me?" And you will recall how our lip numb with panic, those awful words fell in agonizing despair. And there we cowered in the deep, impenetrable gloom of the soul's remorse, which is the hell of alcoholism. And there we stood naked and trembling in our terrorism of guilt. And in each silent footfall of doom, the echo sounded in our souls with such thunderous roar as to drown out the voice of hope. We were trapped. We were damned. We were doomed. And with a cry of horror, we staggered further into the blackness of despair and began to race the treadmill in that nameless dread which stalks the steps of the upstep. Yes, every alcoholic in this room has known the terror. And this morning, we know the joy. And what a difference. What a contrast. Which no man could possibly express. What a completely fantastic, bewildering, and maggoty brain paradox the alcoholic is. Look at yourself. Why, a few weeks or months, years ago, you couldn't bribe with five cases of Sneaky Pete two Skid Row bums to come and look at you in the feet. And here this morning, here are 325 of the very elite who come to applaud you in victory. And at $5 a copy. Yes, the dirty-faced angels of hell have certainly become the glamour boys of Elysium. And then there are our AA girls. God bless them. Seldom, if ever, do they get the credit which is their due. Everybody always uses the masculine pronoun in describing events in AA. And truly, I think that they are far more gallant and valiant than we, because their problems are different. And certainly every male alcoholic in this room will tip his hat in their direction this morning. But thank God they lose neither their wit nor their self-confidence when they come into AA. We've got a typical girl in our group in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And she was down in New York one time at a very swank pub with a lot of wealthy snobs who were drinking, and one of the bored debutantes said, "Oh my," she said, "you know, when my diamonds get dirty, I clean them in champagne, and my rubies in sparkling burgundy, and my pearls in cream de coco." My, said our AA girl, what a bore. "Why," she said, "when my baubles get dirty, I just throw the damn things away." I made a 12-step call with this girl. Had very definite, positive opinions. I made a 12-step call with her one night. There was a gal in jail. Beautiful little girl of 23. Her first time in jail, and of course she was terrified. An RAA girl was consoling. Now, honey," she said, "everything's going to be all right. Everything's going to be all right. And when we leave," she said, "you get down on your knees and pray to God. She will help you. You know, if we take a moment to look back what we were and from whence we came, we may have more gratitude in our hearts this morning to Almighty God for what we are and to each other. You can all remember the night that you came into AA. Well, that night, you were put on honor. This morning, honor is placed upon you. When we came into AA, the words, "In God we trust," well, they were but a motto on the coin of men, in which most of us were so poor. But today, we know that phrase to be a spiritual epigram on the currency of God, in which all of us have become so rich. And we, who when we came into AA were flat on our backs, we know this morning that the surest way for a man to stand up on his feet is to get down on his knees. And we, who when we came into AA were not trusted by men in even the most trivial affairs in life, are now trusted by God in one of the most important jobs on earth. Trusted by Him to preserve and to pass on the mighty miracle of release from alcoholic addiction. And we who, when we came into AA, as Fitz said the other night, were darting through the back alleys of life, picking as our boon companions only those whose kinship we recognized by the madness in their eyes and the terror in their soul. This morning we are free men. Free men. Unafraid of attack from any quarter of life. And we who, when we came into AA, trusted to self, well, we know now. We know better than anyone else in this world that there simply is not enough horsepower in willpower to raise any alcoholic from the swamps of drunkenness to the heights of sobriety, and to keep him there. And we who, when we came into AA, surrendered to a power greater than ourselves, we know now that we had returned to us a power greater than we surrendered. And because we are living not merely a program, but a principle, we have learned the great, central, paradoxical truth of all life, in and out of AA, that man gains total victory over self only through unconditional surrender to God. Yes, we can look back and see the alcoholic life, you know, is cyclonic. Heedlessly, ruthlessly, the winds of his weakness, hurricanes through his existence, and the roaring blast of his folly lay desolate even those of the hearts he loved. And deep affections are cruelly uprooted, and injuries and injustices testify to the wild havoc, the storm of our passionary, the very strength of our weakness, and the recklessness of our selfishness, made even our home lives a drab, dreary commentary on peace and security. And whatever the material wealth of an alcoholic, he, like the rest of us, lives on the among the terror and the tumult, on that dark and fearsome skid row of the soul. Well, how can an alcoholic still this wild storm which rages through his soul? How can he calm the tempest of his spirit? Well, not the mind of man, nor the strength of his will, not the power of science, the knowledge of medicine, or even the charity of religion, can stop this hurricane of self-destruction. Before this ferocious storm, the very genius of man stands mute. Release from this typhoon is found, as we all know, only through the love and the power of Almighty God. And even God himself has to use extraordinary power to effect release from this tyrant. the power of the miraculous. Only the miracle of God's love has released us. And this, I think, is what we are celebrating at this first Georgia AA conference this morning. The miracle of AA. Well, what is a miracle? A miracle is an event in the natural world, but out of the established order, possible only through intervention of divine power. I am sure that every alcoholic in this room will agree with that dictionary definition of an alcoholic. Well, you take a man who for years has cowered before the merciless tyrant of booze, suddenly finds himself not only free, but actual master of that swaggering, sadistic devil. Surely that is a miracle. And when a man who has heard the leering ghosts and been taunted and haunted and mocked and jeered by those ghosts of self-pity, shrieking through his soul, finds suddenly that he hears the sublime music of life. Surely that is a miracle. And when a human being made in the likeness and image of God finds himself drowning in the loneliest, most desolate ocean of the world, the sea of booze, suddenly finds himself safe in the beautiful harbor of sobriety. Surely that is a miracle. And when a man who could not strive as he would become a success, cannot now, under the most terrific barrage of fate, possibly become a failure, surely that too is a miracle. And when we who made the worst possible investment in the world, now draw the largest daily dividends in existence, that is a miracle for which the material capitalist would give his soul to possess, and whose secret he is not likely to learn. And when we, who formerly each day mortgaged the wealth of the future to pay the debts of the past so that we might drink up the non-existent present, now find the past discharged, the present secure, and the future guaranteed, that indeed is a miracle. And when we possess the power, and indeed we do, of increasing our capital in exactly the ratio in which we give it away, that is a miracle which will continue to baffle all of the economic materialists. Well, I think we ought to think on these things, because they are literally, they are veritably true. Each one of us is the recipient of God's incredible miracle, the miracle. But you know, there is a stranger, an even more awesome quality about the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, which, so far as sudden thought can discover, is completely and absolutely unique in the history of man. You know, miracles of the past are underscored on every page of history. Christ gave the blind to see and the lame to walk, and the dead to rise. But, and here is the difference between those miracles and the incomprehensible miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. When Christ restored the sight to the blind man, he did not give to him the power of restoring sight to other blind men. The miracle stopped with him. And the lepers whom Christ cleansed could not cleanse others. And the girl whom our blessed Lord raised from the dead, God did not put into her hands the dominion over life and death. The miracle stopped with her. And even in modern times, when Almighty God, whom we recognize and to whom this conference is a tribute, when he parted that blazing inferno, that circle of oil which surrounded those torpedoed sailors in the South Pacific, when each swam through that inferno to safety, he did not give them the power of bringing such help to others. And when Almighty God sent that seagull to Eddie Rickenbacker's desperate but believing party, he did not put into Rickenbacker's hands the power of bringing the same sustenance to other hopeless and despairing men. No, it is a staggering thought. But nowhere, literally nowhere in the entire cavalcade of men passing and pushing his way up over the horizons of time, has it been given to man to be both the recipient and the dispenser of the miraculous. Not, that is, until the concept of Alcoholics Anonymous was formulated by Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. Never was it given to a person to possess the miraculous power and to pass on that power to others. Think of it. Unique in all history. And certainly the very contemplation of it brings us up short in breathless wonder at the stupendousness, the miraculous almightiness of the miracle each of us has received and each of us has in his heart and in trust. But is this true? Is this incredible thing true, or is it merely a mirage? And is the recounting of it but rhetorical fancy or demonstrable reality? Is it simply beautiful allegory or sublime truth? Well, incredible as it is, that out of all of the billions of people of time, that we, the very weakest of God's children, have been chosen to receive this miracle. In this room, there are over 300 living flesh and blood proofs of this miracle. And elsewhere in this world, there are 140,000 miracle men and women. And each of us has the, again, singular and absolutely unique power of either halting this miracle with ourselves or passing it on. This is what we celebrate at every AA meeting. This miracle. An event in the natural world, but out of the established order of things, possible only through intervention of divine power. That is a miracle. Yes, every one of us here is here exclusively through the grace of Almighty God, and we well know it. And as one of the speakers said the other day, that grace has made us the wealthiest people in this world. Whether our possessions are few or many, whether we earn much or little, whether we command or obey, we know, every alcoholic in this room knows, that he is wealthy beyond all materialistic evaluation. And who among us at this moment would trade what he possesses in his heart for the finest materialistic gift within the power of man? Not one. Think of it. There is no other organization under God's great heaven in which the same thing, I am sure, could be said. Because we in AA have learned. We have learned so much. We have learned that there is a knowledge and a wisdom above and beyond all intellectual striving, which is discovered only when man turns from the mountain of the mind to the valley of the soul, to the road of humility. But what a tremendous, awesome obligation this miracle imposes upon each one of us, and what a privilege it bestows. The obligation and the privilege of making others as wealthy as ourselves. And in AA, that is mandatory. The duty, the exalted privilege of passing on this miracle. Perhaps if we realize there are two phases of AA, we might better exercise the one and secure the other. The first phase is when we get AA. The second is when AA gets us. In the first phase, we find sobriety. In the second, peace of mind finds us. When a man gets AA, he redeems the past for himself. But when AA gets him, he secures the future for his brother. When we go through the 12 steps of AA, we receive the accolade of knowledge. But when the 12 steps go through us, we receive the benediction of wisdom. The first phase enables us to help ourselves. The second, to help our brother. And some of us, alas, do not pass from the first to the second phase. And thereby we not only deprive ourselves of the ineffable joy and peace, but we deny to our dying brother the promise of hope. And I think it is a fitting thought on this first AA Georgia State Convention to realize that you AAs of Georgia have not only passed a milestone these past 3 days, but you have erected a beacon of hope. But unless the lamp of charity burns brightly in its tower, it will prove to be but an empty monument, a tomb of self, rather than a monument of hope to others. And you know how any man can tell when he has passed from one phase of getting AA to the other of AA getting him? I think we can do so when we stop admiring the beautiful monument to self that we have built, but climb to its tower and fire its wick of hope with the flint of sacrifice into the flame of charity. And when we tend that constantly, daily, in humility. A man gets AA when he accepts the 12 steps of our program. But AA gets him when he begins to do them. Fisk did such an eloquent job the other night of listing the 12 steps and explaining their meaning as he saw them. And in each one of those 12 steps, as you will recall, there is a word of action. We admitted we were powerless, came to believe, made a decision, made an inventory, admitted to God and to another human being. We're entirely ready. Humbly asked him. Continued to take. Made a list of people. Made amends. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve. Carry this message to alcoholics. Practice these principles in all of our affairs. Action. Every word of those things is an action. And a man, AA gets a man when he begins to do the things which he already knows. Take the dry drunk. Well, he gets enough AA to dry him up. But not enough AA gets him to loosen him up. To let him really live the program. To know what it means. Yes, when AA gets a man, he goes into action because he has to. And his motives lie deep in his soul. He begins to do. He begins to practice these principles in all of his affairs. Not merely those affairs that are concerned with AA. He realizes that he has the obligation before Almighty God to be as charitable to a non-alcoholic as he is to an alcoholic. And he has the wit to know that all of the virtues and the things that he has learned in AA apply to all others. In all of our affairs. When AA gets a man. Yes, in that first phase, when we get AA, we serve ourselves. But when AA gets us, we are eager to serve others. And that, I think, is the essential difference between the two phases of AA. The man who gets AA is very liable to sit down on the broad tread of those 12 steps and watch the passing parade in smug complacency. But the man whom AA gets uses those steps to climb to his high destiny. The man who merely gets AA understands the promise of our program. But the man whom AA gets, he knows its power. The man who merely gets AA has vague, shadowy ideas about life in general. But the man whom AA gets, he has deep, personal, positive convictions about life in particular. And there is one difference, I think, that is as thin as a hairline and as wide as the poles. The man who gets AA acknowledges God, but the man whom AA gets worships him. The man who merely gets AA, he is going to be in for periods of doubt, uncertainty, and confusion. And he will blow hot and cold with the shifting winds of circumstance as they eddy about him. And he will be surprised, disappointed, and shocked at the disparity between what he hears in AA and what he sees in AA. And in such moments, he will turn to his brother for counsel rather than looking to his God for direction. And he will whine and constantly lament the weakness of man without ever even knowing the strength of God, if he only has. You know, I think that every single AA goes through a period of confusion. It may be the first week that he is in. It may be, as it was with me, after the first year that I was in. And we become as confused as the guy who was standing on an intersection of a street, and there were two churches on opposite sides. And he said to his friend, "This seems to be a great waste, all worshiping the same God. Why don't they just combine these two churches and have one?" The fellow said, "No, can't do that." Well, he said, "Why not?" Well, he said, "That church over there says there ain't no hell. This church over here says the hell there ain't." Well, we are very liable to come to such periods of exactly that sort of confusion. And unless AA has us, very liable, this beautiful concept, which has taken us so tragically long to get hold of, will be blasted from our grasp by those whirling winds of doubt. And unless an AA has a man, he is in for periods of bitter disillusionment. He's going to feel the biting sting of man's ingratitude. He's going to have his motives questioned. His very charity will be mocked, doubted, and derided. He will be vilified, lied about, and calumniated. Oh yes, these things will happen to you if you get active in AA and stay active. What then? What then if you merely have AA? Well, the chances are that you might join the yapping crowd baying at the heels of your brother, who feels the call of service too clearly to give heed to the howl of the harpy. No. When AA has a man, he has the wit to know that the embrace involves sacrifice. Sacrifice. What an uncomfortable sounding word that is in the ears of modern men. Sacrifice. The giving up, the yielding of something we cherish for another. But if we have taken step number three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand it, or rather, if that step has taken us, we will know that our life is bound to be different. It cannot help to be. Before, we were following our own impulses, doing our own feeble, puny little will. And now, regardless of daily failure and the weakness of human nature, we are now trying to do the will of God. For that is the step that will revolutionize the life of any man, turning our will and our life over to the care of God. And when that step has a man, he no longer is overly concerned about the opinions of men, good or bad. That doesn't bother him anymore. He is concerned in the opinion and the verdict of God at the end of the day. He is what he is as he stands before his God. He is neither as good as his friends think him, or as bad as his enemies would have him. And he is concerned with only one opinion. And both success and failure in this life take on a totally new and different meaning to the man whom AA has. No longer does he measure either by the ruler of man. He measures both by the yardstick of God. Now maybe all this sounds too pious and solemn, this doing the will of God. It won't, I think, however, if step number three has taken up. Many people have the idea that it is a dry and enervating thing to do the will of God. And it is because they don't understand, I think, that goodness and happiness are synonymous. Oh, not the goody goodness of the downcast eyes and the folded hands. Oh, no. The goodness of a man trying to do the will of God earnestly and humbly in the station of life in which God has placed him. That kind of goodness. But I say many of us are confused. It reminds me of the two colored boys. They hadn't met for some time, and during the interim, each had married. And one of them says, Henry, he says, what kind of wife did you marry? Boy, he says, I married an angel. An angel. He says, how about you? Well, he says, Henry, you sure is lucky. My wife, she's still living. Many people, in their pseudo-sophistication, think, I say, they're doing the will of God rather than a joyous thing to the dry ordeal. As we know the difference. We know the difference. We know the man who makes sacrifices for success, material success, will lose the greatest success of all. But we who make a sacrifice to attain peace of mind and honesty, we achieve that success for which the worldly will have no knowledge. And so it goes, all through the 12 steps of our program. We can get them, or they can get us. And you know, you hear so often in AA that we get out of our program exactly what we put into it. That I do not believe. We get infinitely more than the little we put in. Although the ratio does, of course, hold true. Well, how do we get from this one phase of getting AA to the second of AA getting us? I think we do so by throwing across that deep and dry and arid gulf of indifference and selfishness, the bridge of action, by starting to do these things to which we give lip service, by practicing these principles in all of our affairs. And I think we do so most surely when we exchange our ideas of AA for AA ideals. And when we cross that bridge of action, if we will add just the one letter, L, to the word idea, then we will have the lofty ideals of the one whom AA possesses. And God knows we need ideals. Ideas are not strong enough to support the stout columns of the House of Sobriety. Ideals are what we need. You know, a good idea may make you money, but only a high ideal is going to keep you happy. Yes, a good idea might make you big before men, but only a great ideal will keep us humble before God. And it seems to me there is an unspoken conspiracy. Fisk was talking about the conspiracy the other night. It seems to me that in this day and age there is an unspoken conspiracy in this world to rob a man of his ideals. Sometimes we become almost ashamed of them. Such words as sanctity and piety and goodness. Well, we kind of cringe and flush at them at ideals. Well, every one of us know that the strength of the pillars of AA goes so deep in man only because they rise.
Yeah.
And those pillars are not ideas. They are ideals. And what a wonderful, wonderful time it is for all of us, isn't it? Now, to cross that dry and arid gulf of indifference and selfishness, to throw across it the bridge of action, and to begin to do the things that we know, then indeed will AA have us. And what a wonderful time this Sunday morning in Augusta, Georgia, for each one of us to rededicate ourselves to the ideals of AA. Well, what are they? I think they are all comprised in those ideals which Almighty God Himself gave us. Charity, faith, and humility. Charity, the love of brother for the love of God. Faith, the torch that lights our way from gloom to God. And humility, that virtue which lowers a man to his proper size without degrading him, and thereby increases his stature without inflating him. Charity, faith, and humility. What greatness is possible without them? What greatness is impossible with them? But these are not qualities a man possesses. They are virtues which possess a man. And if we have them only in our minds, they will serve us poorly. But if we will get them in our hearts, they will serve all others magnificently. And what a wonderful lifetime workshop Alcoholics Anonymous is for the facility in the use of these tools. There they lie on the bench of life, the oldest in the world, and some of them hardly used. But the strongest and brightest of these levers is that of charity. Charity, love of brother for the love of God. For when human wisdom and knowledge fail, the constant exercise of charity will succeed. Will, that is, if we use it without stint, without question, and above all, without puny, frail, human little judgment. If we will be but charitable and leave its disposition where it belongs, in the hands of Almighty God, He will see He is too good a bookkeeper to permit any act of charity to be dissipated or to have been made in vain. And if we will carry these tools in our kits of mercy, not only will we fashion for ourselves a beautiful mansion of sobriety, but we will help our brother to erect a house for himself. For it is not, as we all know, it is not what we put into our own lives which enriches us. It is what we put into other lives. And I think we should not forget on this wonderful occasion that we truly, literally, are miracle men and women with the power and the privilege, the awesome responsibility, either of halting the miracle with ourselves or handing it on to our dying brother. We must not be like old Lem, the old hillbilly. Lem came in the house and his mom says, "Where you been, Lem?" He says, "Out in the barn." He says, "You see your paw?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "What's he doing?" He says, "Hanging himself." He said, "Did you cut him down?" He says, "No, weren't dead yet." So we have come from near and far to honor you warriors of the Battle of the Bounce. And we have come to honor you for so magnificently honoring yourselves in your sobriety. And our presence here from near and far speaks far more eloquently than the words of any man. And the earnest of our sentiments to you is something higher than admiration, and something deeper than respect. It is warm, abiding affection. But I think it is well to remember on this joyous occasion that we are not on parade this morning. We are merely on parole. And it is a humbling thought that all that we have won in a few weeks, months, or years of surrender, we can so tragically lose in a moment of rebellion. For a single, thoughtless, prideful, selfish moment, and all of the sweetness of our victory can become the bitterness of our defeat. For that moment in which we loudly proclaim our strength, we shall sadly lament our weakness. And such is the strange paradox of our nature, that our only hope of permanent security lies in the constant recognition of our insecurity. For this priceless treasure, this miracle that we have, was not bought for us in the coin of man. It was purchased for each one of us in the currency of God. And you, who in a few short weeks, months, or years, golden months and years, have redeemed a counterfeit decade, we honor you and we salute you. And you of Georgia AA, who just a few short years ago, who shaking hands were holding the very dregs of death, this morning you can lift aloft the cup of life to a toast to destiny. And you, former shabby spinners of sorrow, soiling with your grimy hands the very skeins of life, now with the golden threads of the spiritual truths of AA, you attend the loom of humility on which is woven the tapestry of man's nobility. Yes, I feel very sure, after being in Augusta for these last 3 days, that not only have the vast majority of you got AA, but AA has you. How else could you possibly account for this truly wonderful conference? You know, our blessed Lord came to his apostles through the closed doors of the upper room. But I am sure that he is coming through our open hearts in the Von Air Hotel to every one of us here this morning. And perhaps we can catch his words of benediction as we return to our homes to practice these principles in all of our affairs. I have put my ideals in your heart as I have my stars in heaven. The strongest and brightest of these are charity, faith, and humility. Look in, then look up. Course your AA craft among the stars, and I will keep you always on the beam. Follow these ideals of mine, charity, faith, and humility. Follow them into your brother's heart, and you will find yourself in mine.